Thank you. I'm Takeshi Sano from Osaka University. So I talk about the local ceiling box calculation of MRI. So my collaborator is Jim Stone and Shuichiro Inutsuka, who is in Kyoto, and Neil Turner. So motivation is simple. We want to understand the efficiency of the angular momentum transport by MRI in accretion disks. And my major interest is in the evolution of the protoplanetary disk and planet formation theory. So I want to understand the role of the MRI on these topics. So question we address mainly, for example, the how does magnetic dissipation affect the MRI? Because the protoplanetary disk, the temperature is quite low, so it's a lower ionization degree. So in that case, the dissipation process is quite important. So we have to treat that effect into the MRI. The second one is more general. So what determines the saturation level of the stress? So this is simply because we want to know the source origin of the alpha parameter. So this is outline of this talk. So I want to talk about mainly if the effect of the ohmic dissipation. So the first, I'll show the linear analysis result and its application to protoplanetary disks. And then I'll show the nonlinear simulations. So if I have a time, that I'd like to comment on the current project, which is on the saturation mechanism of the MRI. So what we actually did is we examined the dependence of the saturation level on physical quantities such as gas pressure or field strength or field geometers and so on. So, but we'll talk about mainly on first one. So this is a linear analysis result of the MRI with ohmic dissipation. So this is a dispersion relation. So this axis is wave number, and this is growth rate. So for ideal MHD case, this is a black one. So the characteristic wavelength is VA over omega, and the maximum growth rate is order of angular velocity. But if we include the dissipation effect, then they can reduce the growth rate and also suppress the small scale instability. So, and the size of the dissipation is characterized by the magnetic Reynolds number. So, in this talk, I use this definition. I should use differently, but in this talks, I call this magnetic Reynolds number. So, so sorry. But,
it's the long question.
Yes, yes. I know. So,
even for that scale.
But, forgive me.
For that scale, yes.
Is that the
which is dependent on VA?
Is
that that's L. It's L VA over eta.
Is it the initial VA or is it?
For linear analysis, initial. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
So definition is here. We use the typical velocity, the alpha speed, and the length for typical length scale. We use the most unstable wavelength of the MRI for ideal limit. So if the resistivity increases, then the magnetic Reynolds number decreases. So if it becomes about unity, they affect the dispersion relation significantly. So they suppress the higher wave number, which means the smaller wave number perturbation, and also they reduce the growth rate. So I want to summarize the characteristic scales of the MRI in the resistive regime, which is the magnetic Reynolds number is less than unity. So in that case, most unstable wavelengths now is given by the eta over VA. This can be obtained as a simple analysis. So if we create the affine timescale, which is the gross timescale of the MRI, is comparable to the dissipation time, then that gives this length scale. So this is a typical wavelength for resisting regime. Oh, it is magnetic diffusivity. So I'll show you the equation later. So then the maximum growth rate is now given by the VA square over eta. This is given by the inverse of the dissipation time scale of this length scale. So if the magnetic diffusivity eta increases, then the characteristic wavelength increases and maximum growth rate decreases. So ohmic dissipation really suppresses the MRI. So then the meaning of the magnetic Reynolds number unity is the dissipation time scale is comparable to the dynamical time scale. So if the magnetic Reynolds number is less than unity, it means the dissipation time scale is shorter than dynamical time scale. That means the ohmic dissipation suppress the MRI significantly. So in that meaning, so this quantity is quite important. So in order to apply this to real protoplanetary disk, we have to know the magnetic diffusivity in protoplanetary disk, so which is given by the conductivity. And that is a function of the number densities of charged particles. And here, tau is a viscous damping time scale of charged particle through the collision with neutral particles. So this is a function of the charged particle.
It's a viscous time scale?
Viscous damping time scale means the momentum loss time scale.
So this is the usage of the words here I'm unfamiliar with. I would have thought this is just the collision time scale.
Oh.
With neutrals. With neutrals.
Yeah. Mostly, yes.
Okay.
For, yes. For electron, exactly.
For electron, the usually has a length scale coming around. It's collision time scale.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the ion neutral, the electron neutral collision time.
Yes. So, okay. So we calculate the abundances of the charged particle in the protoplanetary disks. This is a typical one. So this axis is the radius from the central star, and this axis shows the abundances of the charged particles, which includes electrons, metallic ion, and molecular ion, and H3+. And also, we include the grain into the analysis. And this, the existence of grain is quite important because such a dense region, the recombination, major recombination process is on the grain surface. So the characteristic of grain affect significantly on the charge state in the protoplanetary disk. So basically, if the radius gets smaller, then the density increases. So if a higher density gives a higher recombination rate, so which means the ionization degree is increasing function of R. So inner region is less ionized. So the typical picture. So and to keep the MRI active, so we need some lower limit of the electron abundance, which is about 10 to the 12th or 10 to the 13th, minus 12th or 10 to the minus 13th, which is about here. So the critical radius, it's about 10 AU or 20 AU. So.
Yeah, let me ask you, when we are plotting these figures, this refers to
mid-plane condition?
Oh, yes, this is for mid-plane condition. So we calculate every the two-dimensional pre-location. And
you don't include the X-rays?
No. So we include on the cosmic rays, yes.
What's
the start of the same? Oh, this is cosmic ionization rate.
Right.
So, yes. So it is typically the 10 to the minus 17. But why decrease is there is a limit of the quantum density which cosmic ray can penetrate. So if inner part has a larger quantum density, so in that case, the cosmic ray cannot reach to the midpoint, so it gives lower.
So this has to do with the astrophysical model, but you're in an early enough phase that the protostar is not blowing the wind. There's no stellar wind coming from the protostar that's forming.
It's a very early phase.
Well, I'm asking: is this model does or does not include?
Not include. Yeah. So basically, we use the Kyoto model, which is the turbulence once dies away, and we usually start from the static and quiescent disk, and I use such a model as a typical model. So, yeah.
And you also have a model for the disk to give you the color.
Yes.
What kind of model is that?
Oh, it's a Kyoto model. So
minimum mass?
Yeah, minimum mass for a
nebula. What does that mean?
Oh, it's the sigma, the quantum density, is a function of R to the power minus 3/2. So sigma is a function of R. Yes.
It also means you just take the metals that you see in the solar system and you add them on hydrogen
and
helium
to give you a
cosmic abundance.
That's why it's a minimum mass.
The minimum mass you need to make the solar system.
Yeah, that's
see.
Right.
I see. Well, no one has to call it 1,000.
And even though it's a minimum mass, everybody assumes that this is the mass.
It's all bad yours.
Okay, so using that distribution of the magnetic diffusivity, we can estimate where is unstable region for MRI. So this is typical result. So this is again R, and this is the vertical direction. So the simply speaking, the MRI can occur only outer part of the disk, and typically critical radius is about 10 AU. Of course, it depends on the disk model. So it depends on the surface density distribution or the source of the ionization. But usually, it is about order of 10 over 1 AU.
So let me ask, maybe this is just jumping the gun, but there's enough ionization here and enough collisionality that the alpha ion speed is based on the total mass density or just on the ionized component?
It's total mass.
So the ionization is high enough that everything's well covered.
Yes. Okay.
So that's okay. We talked about only the distribution, but in the outer parts, even in the midpoint, the dominant part of the connectivity could be polyfusion.
Yes.
Yeah. So is that what you're saying, or you're strictly talking about only?
This figure is only talking about ohmic dissipation. So ambipolar diffusion can also suppress the MRI. So that is efficient, basically outer part of the disk. So, but I didn't include that in this figure.
I just wanted to mention that quite possibly on that range, hole vision may already be
changed. Hole effect cannot change this picture. That's my opinion. But ohmic dissipation is typically marginal, so maybe it could be unstable for MRI. So And we usually call this unstable region is magnetically dead zone. So, and I have to mention the very inner region about 0.1 AU, less than 0.1 AU. So that is a coupled region, magnetically coupled region. That is because of the radiation. So the thermal ionization is enough to activate the MRI. So that means the death zone is from 0.1 AU, typically 0.1 AU to 10 AU. That's the typical picture.
Can the X-rays from young star
ionize
that region?
Yes. Even when, so for example, Glasgow did such a calculation. I include the only cosmic ray, but he included only X-ray. But the typical picture is the same. So there is a dead zone, and outer body is well coupled.
X-ray don't penetrate.
Yes, quantum density, penetration quantum density is much smaller. So. Okay, so the size of this figure shows the size of the dead zone for many different models. So as I said, the dust grain affects a lot in this picture. So if, for example, I assume the same size dust grain for simplicity. So if I change the size of the grain, then the dead zone radius becomes up to 40 to from 5 AU. So that means if a big grain have less effect, means the big grain, if the grain grows, the total surface area decreases. So which means the effective importance of the grain can be small. So if grain grows, then actually the magnetically active region enhanced. So
you're changing the grain size at constant dust mass.
That's right. That's right. So the similar thing can be said. I change just dust fraction. So this FG1 means mass fraction of dust is equal to the interstellar value. But if that value decreases, then of course the number of the dust grain decreases. So then that reduces the ohmic dispersion effect. So
how does dust affect the ionization action? What's the physical process?
That is because the recombination on the dust grain is quite important. It's a major recombination process. So if we include dust, then the most of the free electron is just captured by dust grain. So then the number of the free electron decreases. So that's why it's on this.
So when you get a smaller dust grain, you have more surface area.
Yes. So. MRI and distribution. You need the dust distribution.
Instead of all one size,
yes. In that case, the most of the total surface area is given by the smaller dust grain. So if I use some typical model, then it gives the larger dead zone. But the order doesn't change. It's about 20 or 30 still. So this is the typical picture of MRI in the protoplanar disk. So ohmic dispersion is quite important. And the typical picture is inner dead zone and outer active region. So the question is, the mass accretion is dead zone. So because we need mass accretion onto star. So this is still open question. So this can be by gravitational instability, because if there's a dead zone, so mass accumulate there, and sometimes it can be gravitationally unstable. Or
can I ask a question? I'm sorry to butt in, but it's important, this ionization question. the have you thought at all, or really haven't included it, about Alfvén's critical ionization?
I'm sorry, sir.
Have you thought at all about Alfvén critical ionization?
Alfvén critical.
Well, then we should talk about it later.
Oh, sir.
You want to ask, or what is Alfvén?
We can talk about it later. So.
Well, just tell us what the effect is.
Oh, Alfvén,
the photomagnetic field.
Basically, it says, rather than saying your ionization is dependent on the cross sections, Alfvén made this, which at the time was wildly speculative hypothesis, just so as to have a protostellar disk which was sufficiently ionized that the fields were important. And instead of saying that ionization required you to wait a mean free path or something like impact ionization, so as soon as relative velocities between ions and neutrals was above the energy above the ionization, energy would ionize instantly.
Yeah.
And this actually works. You can see it happening in things like outflow from comets. But Arya says he's worried about it, it doesn't matter.
No, I can't remember, and then Pedro's field showed me that because particles from the left coupled to the field would be moving around.
The electrons and ions, they couple to the field.
Right, but you don't develop that much relative velocity.
There's never, relative velocities are never above the ionization energy of.
Oh, actually, that we're just considering. So, yes, we'll talk about later. So, yes.
Just a matter of curiosity.
Yes, actually, it could be important. It's marginal, so we need more detailed calculation. Okay, so back to here. So, the another idea of the accretion of death zone is layered accretion. It's proposed by Charles Gamy. So even when the dense region is decoupled from magnetic field, the outer layer can be coupled because the low quantum density and low density. So if the active quantum density of the active layer is large enough, then matter can accrete through the layer. But the question is how much quantum density are there? So that's the problem. So. And again, so characteristics of dust grain affect the size of the magnetic rotationally unstable region. So which means the coupling between MHD evolution and dust evolution is quite interesting topics. So
point, because I think it's important, it's not just to make a point, we can discuss it. Later, I talked with Eric about yesterday also that if you have a large scale field, so that's something that she will leave noticed in 96, and then also one that's 97. You have a large scale field, and you drive an outflow. Mm-hmm. So you establish a global current pattern, which is a radial current. That current would flow also in the seemingly weakly coupled regions. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that you would establish a D5. You would establish a gradient. Your D5 DZ would give you the radial current density. And so you would have a D5 already growing, even when the MRI is not growing, or even when the magnetic field cannot be bent to drive it away. But D5 would already be growing, even in the seemingly dead zones of the disk. And that means that we take angular momentum from there, because mm-hmm. the torque is D5 DC. Mm-hmm. So there may well be accretion. And in his, he gave a more solution, Chi Yun Lin, in his 96 paper, where there was very weak coupling, but still there was the same M dot convecting of height all the way from the midpoint of the disk. They still go very slowly, density is high, but the M dot is still there.
No,
there's another resistive part of the disk where it's very resistive, yes. And you're developing a magnetic field, why is it not diffusing that?
No, you have a large scale field, and you are able to get a B5 basically associated with the current. So you say, well, it's a very weak coupling, it's a very slow time.
Why does the current have to close all the way through those inner regions? Develop a minimum.
It so happens that it's a you drive a current through a resistive region. I mean, that's what the solution is. It's not that you cannot drive it. It's a resistive. You still use Ohm's law.
So there's an assumed large scale B that's all over the disk and not only in the more ionized regions of the disk.
It's a large scale BC that just threads.
And it's assumed to thread, including the inner resistive region.
Yeah, it just goes through the disk. It came in from the outside, it goes through the disk. And
Okay. Helena is telling me that I should ask Kageyoshi to proceed.
Okay. So into this part, it's based on linear analysis. So.
Don't pass the buck.
I spoke up, so I take full responsibility.
So next part is on the nonlinear simulations. So I use local sharing box. So the advantage is for the resolution of the MRI wavelengths, that gives the higher resolution than global simulation, and also the longer time integration. So that's the advantage of local sharing box calculation. And another one is the most simple. So the thick sharing box is just a part of the disk. So, and the initial condition is a Keplerian disk with magnetic field, and I ignored vertical gravity. So initially the density and pressure is uniform. And just for simplicity, so constant magnetic diffusivity we assume. And then the size is given by this number, the magnetic resonance number. So we're solving the equations we're solving is basically the resistive MHD equation. So eta is here in induction equation and energy equation. But actually, so our scheme is a total energy scheme. So I use the total energy equation for scheme.
So the velocity, there's no viscosity.
Oh, no viscosity. Only I put the magnetic resistivity only. So that.
And there's no cooling either.
No cooling. So MHD equation plus just ohmic dissipation term.
And heat doesn't go into pressure?
Just go.
Where does it go?
What
is epsilon?
Oh, equation. Oh, I use the just simple ideal gas.
P is rho epsilon. Pressure is rho epsilon.
Yes. Okay. At plus gamma.
So you didn't write. I think what he's asking is you didn't write down the equation of state.
Or just write epsilon equals.
Yes.
P over rho.
Yeah.
Well, that means you have no chance to get the steady state, right?
In this system, yes.
Because the energy will be continuous, right?
That's right. So this is such a system. So typical evolution. So this is a snapshot of the turbulent state. So this is x means radial direction, and z is vertical, and y is azimuthal. So this is for the zero net flux case. In that case, we saw many small structure in the turbulence, and yes.
So what does zero net flux mean?
Oh, the initial field is vertical, but the one side is a positive. Yes, sinusoidal. So total net flux is zero.
And this is toroidal field
current. Yes. Okay. Scar is toroidal. So plus is red and minus is blue. So there are many currents inside the disk.
So I read this as there's lots of current sheets all over the place.
Yes. Sure. So it's stretched by basically the shear flow. So in this plane, it's everything small scale, but it's in y. So at the mutual direction, it's stretched by shear flow. So typically it's kind of filamentary structure. And we usually follow the evolution of the magnetic energy and also magnetic stress. So this is the typical one. So this is the time evolution of the magnetic field strength. So in very short time, the linear growth, exponential growth, and then it saturates at some level. So usually the BY, which means the toroidal component, is dominant. And also we very interested in this magnetic stress. And we usually time average over more than 50 orbit in order to, because it is a very chaotic phenomenon, so it's better to take a longer time to average.
So
So are the ratios usually typically like that, which was like 30 to 3 to 1 or something like that?
Yes. In energy, so V squared case, the Vy has about 25 times larger than Vz. And I'll show the ratio later. But
that sounds similar to what everything seems to find.
Yes, yes. It's quite difficult.
It's probably robust. But have you done resolution studies here on the saturation? On the absolute saturation level.
I have some, but I don't think. Yes. But if you're interested, I'll show you.
Yeah, they
do depend
on that. Yes, yes. Those ratios change when you put in
These ratio does not change. These ratio is always constant.
Well, you don't have vertical gravity, though, but in simulation of vertical gravity, you get roughly the same ratios.
I know that the toroidal field is, of course, always dominant. I don't know what Vz and Vx is.
So buoyancy isn't negative, that's true. Mm-hmm. I mean, what?
You don't create these nice polarities.
Does anybody understand why you get those ratios?
Oh.
I mean, I'm a little confused with the X and Y. So the dominant field is the V5.
Y is phi.
Y is toroidal. And it's about order of magnitude bigger than the original field.
The square of the field. Yeah. The stress, not the field.
The stress
is the square of the field.
It's about an order of magnitude larger than.
Yeah, so the field is V5.
Yeah. Bz also grows.
Bz group, it's almost saturated. It's huge.
In the beginning, they all grow up from a small value. And the initial seed field you have here is very, very small.
Yes.
Isn't it partly because you have, for the toroidal field, you have the extra amplification just on the shear?
Yes, that's right. So the three points.
Yeah,
but
I think we all, we do know why the toroidal field is dominant. I don't know why.
The ratio. And also interesting ratio is here, so magnetic stress is always given by this number. So it's about 0.5 times to the magnetic energy. So this is true even for global stimulation. You may remember the John Hoare talk, he also shows this number. So this is quite, universal number, but we still don't know why it's 0.5.
Oh,
this is the correlation.
Yeah,
so.
That means that there are also very well correlated. Went the other way.
It went the other way.
It goes the other way because BR here is smaller.
Yeah, we need strong correlation. That ratio is actually 0.25 in terms of B and B.
So but BR is a lot smaller than B5.
BR and B5 kind of must be very correlated.
That's not crazy because I mean if you figure that your local structure is taken, the toroidal structure, the shear amplifies what is a local radial field, so two would be correlated locally.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if you look back to this picture, everything's roughly at the same angle, BR and B5. Right? You just reverse the direction of the field, you've got stripes.
Yeah.
You reverse B5, you reverse BR. I mean, in the picture, it looks like lined up stripes.
Okay, so next one is gas pressure evolution. So
before you go on, have you done things to calculate out of these data with correlation functions and the spectra and the intermittency functions?
I made a spectrum, but I haven't done any other analysis.
I mean, your picture that you had in the previous slide was there was an awful lot of intermittency in this turbulence. If one tries to play with any sort of
theoretical model,
the picture's very pretty, but it don't actually tell you very much.
That's right.
Can we go back to that picture and see? I have trouble seeing.
I can't Fourier transform that way.
I actually see almost a periodicity in the y-axis.
It could be, but these things are pretty.
They're all lined at 30 degrees.
the things are pretty intermittent. I mean, stuff is rather concentrated in particular places, and it's got some memory of some sort of orderly structure, or ability to produce some sort of orderly structure.
Can I make a recommendation? So you're here next week.
And yes.
So we only have him for another week.
Mm-hmm.
You guys should
yes.
really be working
yes.
with him. How to analyze this.
That's right. So, yes. Yeah.
Provide information that you need to for understanding how dissipation really occurred.
For example, I just calculated some probability distribution function.
Yeah.
It's shaped
the. Really
yeah.
How to analyze their data.
Please.
they need advice.
Try.
Oh, love to be advised. I'm taking criticism.
Yeah, that's easy to. But you've already read those books, John, so you can tell them.
I actually have.
So next one is gas pressure. So in this system, we didn't add the cooling. So the pressure is increasing monotonically with time. So that is mostly due to the heating, of course. I have that term only. And this heating rate, so in the steering box system, heating rates can be given by the size of the stress. So there is some correlation and relation between the correlation and the heating. So this is some kind of demonstration of the effect of the resistivity. So this is the saturated amplitude of stress. And I divide by pressure. So which means this is the standard alpha. So here I plot the eta. So I just change the size of the magnetic diffusivity and see what happens.
You're dividing by the initial pressure, is that right?
No, this divided by the pressure at the nonlinear stage.
Okay, but even though the pressure is increasing,
yes.
and the stress is constant.
I'll show you the result related to that. Actually, the stress is slightly increasing if you look. Look at carefully. Yes.
Okay.
So that's interesting point. So, yeah.
This is good that it stays the same.
All right. So if the resistivity is small, means ideal limit. So I put. Oh, this is just number. So. So this is just a demonstration. I'll show the physical meaning of eta in the next slide. But here, I just see a number. So here, this is almost ideal MHD because this is too small to resolve the resistivity. So I just start there and just increase the resistivity and see the saturation amplitude. So as you can see, it's sudden drop. It's the order of 3.
Where is the magnetic Reynolds number equal to 1 based on the initial on the linear theory? The linear theory would have said on the
that is here. So the meaning of the critical eta is exactly given by this number. So if this number is greater than unity, then we can expect the saturation. I mean the turbulence driven by MRI. But if this number is less than unity, then turbulence just dies away. So in this diagram, so here this one is proportional to b squared. So this is also proportional to b squared. So just this go down linearly, so along this line.
But now this b a squared is not initial.
Not initial one. So this is a saturated one. But this quantity is very useful to represent the state of the turbulence.
So the cynic in me would say that you get to this point, which is where your resistivity is equal to your numerical resistivity, and you get the same answer.
Yes.
Change it after you get to there, because you're changing method.
Yes, to answer that, so only I can say is we can calculate the exact amount of Joule heating rate. And that is almost 90% of the heating rate. So we believe at least.
But in
In Zeus, when the B field is annihilated, the energy is just lost.
Oh, my scheme is
something different.
My scheme is a total energy scheme. Uh-huh. So the total energy is conserved. And
that should be even without the explicit.
Yeah, that's what he's saying. Without the explicit, still it's
conserved. Yes, yes.
So how can you diagnose at what point we're getting numerical reconnection?
So, yeah, that's right. So we can calculate the amount of Joule heating, even though we don't use that for evolution, but we can count that and compare with the real heating rate. So the rest of that would be numerical dissipation. Just goes thermal heating because of the just a numerical dissipation. But so at least for close to here, the ratio is almost 90% of the total and the total thermal energy.
So Steve, you're not quite correct then? So it's still, so explicit resistivity is still dominating up there.
Well, it's dominating the energy dissipation, but remember his numerical scheme, he says, conserves energy. So he could still have numerical reconnection, which is preserving energy, right?
Right.
Yes.
Reconnection and what's dissipating energy.
But he's comparing to then taking the observed structures. He took the observed magnetic structures and calculated the explicit Joule.
Yes.
Using your applied resistivity,
yes.
That's 90%.
Yes.
Maybe a better question is, does the size of the typical magnetic structures change as you go from 1 to 3 here?
No, maybe.
The numerical resistivity is determining the size of the structures.
But at least here.
One way to tell is to scale the grid, right? Isn't that the only way to tell?
It's the best way to tell.
What?
We have done some resolution studies, right?
Yes.
And how would this?
Okay. So at least for this diagram, the resolution doesn't matter. So it's always on this diagram. This kind of. It's a rough fitting formula. It's on this formula. So, yeah.
You didn't change the resolution. What did you do in terms of refining the grid? How far did you go?
How much did you increase the resolution?
Oh, it's 4 in each direction.
Gravity changes anything on the log scale,
right? You mean the resolution study?
You're not really being fair here because it is resolved, and that break there, which is the interesting one, has nothing to do with the other.
No, that's conceded.
Yeah.
But then that's basically linear stable. So at a certain point, he has a linear instability, and the question is there slope beyond that or not? It's conceded that he's got the break right. The question is what comes above that.
Yeah, but when it turns out to the numerical effects, is 3 orders of magnitude beyond that. So there is an established flat part.
Yeah.
Can I ask one other question?
Sure.
So in your, even though the resolution studies weren't, they didn't have a big dynamic range, that alpha value that you get, does that vary when you change the resolution?
It depends on the field geometry. If I put the uniform vertical field, I could see the convergence.
But if you have no net flux.
It's actually depend on the resolution.
Yeah, that's right.
But in the sense that if the higher resolution gives lower saturation amplitude.
Lower.
Yes. So that is being related to the structure of the turbines. So
maybe you have to do the Prandtl number effect that everybody's observing.
Can you tell me which one of the, you said there were 4 points in which you still got 90%?
Oh.
First 4.
First of all, 2, yes.
Well, first 2.
Yes. And I don't remember the number for the
reducing the resistivity, then obviously it has nothing to do with the resistivity out there.
Of course, yeah, so then that ratio is
the first 2, excuse me, but I could draw a straight line and keep on going up.
Mm-hmm. But
it's only the first 2 points.
But this is not a line. This is decaying. So this is temporal one.
Now he's saying stay to the right of the red line. He agrees with you on the left. Uh-huh. Does it go up? He's asking, oh, can you draw a line through there? Yeah.
But as I said, the dynamic range is quite small, so I don't.
Yeah, that's all he does.
I can say that this is, yeah, this wall. Yeah.
No. I'm worried that he's basically making a transition from being ordinary resistivity dominated to being numerical resistivity dominated. And he's saying, no, he's not, because those first 2 points, right, he's still got 80% of the energy being dissipated by his real resistive element, right? But I'm saying the first 2 points is not very convincing if it was that last one on the right-hand side.
Yes. I wouldn't say much on this side, but the query, this is a dissipation by physical resistivity, right? Because if
sure. Then those points are very interesting.
Yeah.
Is the energy budget of the, when you said the energy, what about the viscosity? How does that affect this thing? Is that
kinetic viscosity?
Well, the grid viscosity, which isn't in the field. So the velocity, the viscosity, the velocity equation, the numerical viscosity.
Yes.
I mean, is that, when you say, so that's accounted for when you say 80% of the energy is captured by the resistance.
Yes. So which means it's at most the least.
Okay, and that includes both the numerical, okay.
Is this a total energy scheme?
Yes. It's total energy scheme, yes.
I'm a step back, I'm not as advanced yet on this. So just two basic questions. One is that the transition, you justify this being transition to linear instability, but from your argument before, the linear instability transition would have happened to the left of this red line, because you're basing it on the pre-amplified PC.
Yes. For example, so this one is linearly unstable, but the turbines cannot kept and then just died away. So in that sense, the linear stability criterion has a different point. So, but this is.
Is it really true that the magnetic field, even in the BC direction, has been amplified by more than 3 orders of magnitude?
Three.
Or the square of it?
Oh, if this one.
So where is the original Reynolds number of one in front of your plot here?
It is about it's about 10. It's around 10.
Can you show it this
way? Here. So.
So
point one. So sorry. Yes.
And another question from, there are some other people who did such, Fleming and Stone and Tony did such similar analysis simulations, and they were quoting alphas which are like 2 orders of magnitude higher. So what is this significant?
It's a difference whether there's an initial flux in the in the vertical direction.
Yes.
Matters a lot.
Yeah, I'm sure. Just later.
That's another question we shall ask.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so at least the resistivity can suppress, really suppress, and this criterion is quite useful. That's my point. Okay. So I include many models in this diagram. So I plot all here. So roughly speaking, all models are on the same trend. So this is just a decaying, and here is almost constant. It's not exactly, but almost constant. So to get larger stress, we need really the magnetic Reynolds number greater than unity. So actually, there are many plots here. So they have many different conditions. So they have only they have the zero net field case, also the uniform vertical field gas and uniform toroidal field gas, and also the equation of state is adiabatic case or isothermal case, and also I put on the whole term, this diagram did not change. So, and also this includes a different scheme, like, so this includes John Hoy's result, also Tim Fleming's result. So.
Okay, I am totally confused about this. So again, the pressure's increasing with time, right? And you're saying that the stress really is increasing in proportion to that, even in a finite.
Not proportional, not proportional.
Well, okay, so it's increasing, but at a lesser rate.
Yeah.
So I mean, if you ran this for a gazillion time scales, then that ratio would have to go to zero. So I don't understand.
So this is local disk ball calculation.
Right.
So if it's in reality, if the pressure increases, then the scale height of the box, scale height can increase. So actually, this box size has effect on the stress.
Wait, your box size, it's scaled with the pressure too?
But it's scaled by the initial pressure.
Right, so it's fixed.
Yes.
Fixed, right?
So which means the ratio between the box size and pressure scale height is changing. So higher pressure means the pressure scale height is getting larger.
Right.
But box size, of course, is staying.
Right.
So in real system, the...
No, I understand that, but I don't know. I still don't understand what this ball means.
Yes, it's meaningless to think of running this for an ambient path because there is no cooling.
Well, precisely. So I don't. I think.
Just wants to know when is alpha defined.
I don't think alpha is ever defined in these Shearing box simulations for a whole bunch of reasons. In these local, when you don't include stratification, but
yes.
But even under. So is this? Am I right that this is meaningless? That these alpha numbers are just
isothermal.
I think I'll show you the later, and I think I have the numerically obtained alpha.
Right, well,
so. It would be interesting. So,
but the very fact that what determines the saturation level?
That's
what I want to know. And I know it depends on
the primal
number. I know it depends on
That's exactly what I want to know, and it's too.
Can I ask a question that, yes, sir. If we took the vertical line and moved it to 2 instead of 0, it looks to me like it would fit the data as well. The break, if there is a break, is maybe at 2 rather than at 0.
2 in the logarithmic scale?
Yeah, and then can you, then are we looking at numerical effects or are we looking at real resistivity?
Oh,
it's a bit. If the vertical line weren't there and you asked me where to draw it, I would draw it maybe in 2.
Well. Oh. Yeah. Could be. But 2 is.
And then you're 2 points. I think if you were a bunch of experimenters here saying you're plotting the results of all these different observations from all these different instruments, and say this is a very dangerous plot because, you know, which system,
there is a common thing, which is the total resolution, which is achievable.
We're talking about all the systematics that are going on in these simulations,
yes.
And they've all been dumped on the different systematics.
But they're all run on the same computer, is my point. And that means the maximum resolution. No, I'm quite serious. So the maximum resolution would be consistent with the world. That's my point.
Okay, buyer beware, let's move on.
Yes.
Okay. So, I'll show you some characteristics of the MRO turbines. So, one is the time variation. So, the Maxwell stress in the saturated state is highly fluctuating. So, it shows a spiky shape excursion. So, but this is only for uniform VZ gas. If there is a net seed flux to do that. So if you look at the images at the spike, so this is almost top of the spike. So the color again the toroidal field strength. So this is radial and vertical, and vertical and adimuthal. So, which means that this structure is quite axisymmetric, and with the vertical wave number is 1. So this is something like that. So this is the axisymmetric actually channel flow solution, which is the unstable mode of the MRI. So this is dominant of the system. And then, so this structure has shear flow, also current sheet. So that can be destroyed by, one is the KH type instability, which is introduced by the Goodman Q. And also, the in some case, the tearing mode can destroy this structure. In any case, the reconnection takes place to this stage and then goes down. So the exponential, so the spike is typically the exponential growth of the MRI, which is channel flow solution, and exponential decay through reconnection. So which makes some exponential growth and decay makes some spiky.
The channel solution keeps on reoccurring.
Yes. So this is interesting. Also, and this is a figure of the calculation of the Joule heating rate in actual calculation. So if we look at the one spike there, so we can calculate the heating, total heating rate in the system. This is a solid line. And also we can calculate the Joule heating, so done by the physical resistivity I put in code. So this ratio is almost 80% or 90%. In this case, it's 80% or something. So it depends on the resolution also. But most of the energy is dissipated by Joule heating. That is also interesting feature.
So what are the other two lines?
Oh, so this dot line is work done by boundary condition. So actually, so this total amount of this dotted line is equal to, of course, heating rate, because all the energy inputted goes to heating. So, yeah.
But it can be delayed because it goes to the longitudinal kinetic energy first, and then it's converted into the magnetic field, and then it's this one.
But Joule heating is your only explicit heating term in your
In my code, yes. But that could capture almost all for this event. So they can capture the old heating rate. So again, so this is many interesting ratios. So there are many characteristic ratios in the turbulence, which is independent of such a condition of the initial state. And also, yes, many people show the similar ratios. And the most interesting one I already showed is maximum stress is kind of 0.5 to the magnetic pressure. And also, so this is the energy ratio. So BY, BX squared over VZ squared is about 3. And BY squared over VZ squared is over 24 or something. So, and also the perturbed kinetic energy is almost equipartition to the magnetic energy. But actually, the correlation between the magnetic energy and the thermal energy is not so clear. So I don't have any specific ratio for that. So that's the problem.
Yeah, these numbers, I believe, yeah. But that ratio just keeps decreasing with time.
Time goes up, time more energy. Yeah. So, but as I said, in that case, we need a global effect so that the higher pressure can change the structure. So this is kind of an experiment. So here's the power spectrum, but I couldn't get much information from this. Just say it is isotropic, and this is a typical weak dissipation case. It's wave number, and this is B squared. And yeah, typically the smaller K has a large energy.
B
squared.
Three lines,
so. Along the KX and KY, KZ. So,
is this on a system where Kolmogorov would be 5 thirds or 11 thirds?
Yes. But
which one?
Sorry. 11 thirds. But I'm not sure if the Kolmogorov picture is good for this.
He just wants to know which normalization. Okay, so 11 thirds would be consistent.
Yeah, almost. And so if we put the strong dissipation, of course we can see a cut off due to the dissipation. So this is so much steeper. So here is a diffusion, roughly speaking, the diffusion length scale, and lower than, higher than that. So it shows the steep.
We can talk about that later. That would be a really interesting thing.
Are you saying that the velocity goes up k to the minus 8 as well?
Yes.
Velocity doesn't happen yet.
So that be annoying. I mean, yeah. Because this is basically numerical dissipation. So that is almost comparable order to the magnetic resistivity. So.
In the Holley 95, all they did could plot with no explicit resistivity or no viscosity.
It's similar. Again, the dynamic range is quite small, so it is difficult to discuss the shape of this. So.
I'm sorry, weak D, is that velocity?
Weak.
What is X naught?
This is actually the whole term effect, but it doesn't change too much.
So it's B. Both, in both cases, it's B.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So this is summary. So the ohmic dissipation can suppress the MRI at the inner part of the protoplanetary disk. That is an important effect, and the typical dead zone size is about a few tens of AU. And critical the criterion for the instability for linear and nonlinear is well given by this number. Okay, but this is actually defined by the saturated field strength. So that is a difficult point. So that is not good for modeling of disk. Right. So. So then, next question is, what the relation between VA and CS sound speed? Because we usually have model of sound speed much better than our fan speed. So that's a question for almost one.
I knew you knew that was a question. I'm sorry.
I have some hint of, and.
Let's see it.
Okay, so this is long-term evolution of the stress. So if you look at carefully, it's some slight increase here. Mm-hmm. So as I said, the pressure is also increasing in the system. So let's see the correlation between these two. So this, So this is this one. So this is the pressure. So this is stress. This is volume average. So this is time evolution. So if this is here is initial pressure. So it's increasing in this direction. So the stress is amplified and then saturated, but it's moved.
Okay. Does this mean then that we can truly dispense with this crazy idea that the saturation level of the MRI has anything to do with a length scale in the problem? Because your box size is fixed here. And yet your stress is still, your magnetic field is going up and up. And so as the pressure goes up and it just becomes more and more incompressible, that's all you're doing, it's just becoming increasingly incompressible, you're still able to get to higher and higher fields. Or maybe that's it because you're suppressing magnetic reconnection because you're not working. No, that wouldn't work. You'd still get plenty of reconnection. What's going on here?
This is a uniform field case?
No. This one is a zero net field case, but I could see pressure effect for both cases. Yes, that's right.
I mean, this is the
alpha is. But it's still, so this gives relation between the pressure and the the saturated magnetic field.
It's
short time view, and actually this reaction is quite powerful, and even when I change the initial field strength, and every time they goes on this line. So, and also near turret calculation, he saw similar effect on pressure. So higher pressure gives larger stress. But
does Q depend on the resolution?
Q? Oh, no. But the resolution study is quite difficult. So, but I only have two resolution study, but for both, I we could see the same relation.
Sort of related to the question of in your graphs where you showed the turnover as a function of the ADAM,
that is very early phase.
Okay.
So this is just a few orbit. So I usually took an average after 50 orbit or so, because at the beginning there is an initial condition effect. So we want to avoid that as much as possible. So we usually calculate the average is some time later. So in that case, yeah.
I mean, is the constant slope here, does this reflect the regime where you had a constant alpha?
No. He couldn't get a constant alpha.
No, he'd be getting
he'd get alpha going down.
Actually, so this
he's
is
picking the time here.
This is every average of every 50 orbit, for example, then until 600 orbit. So, but they evolve along this line. So, and I also do an isothermal case, which does not increase pressure, but they also on this plot. So,
do you have an answer to the question?
But origin could be in some dissipation process because, as you know, the MRI growth rate does not affect it by pressure unless beta is.
Right, so it has to be the dissipation.
Should be.
But why?
Is no clear answer yet. But yeah.
What happens in the isothermal case? Sorry.
Sorry.
Something also happens in the
isothermal. So this including the both adiabatic and isothermal case, and they are all on this line, and even change.
Why does the pressure increase in the isothermal?
So isothermal case is just fixed. So in that case, the saturation amplitude is almost time independent.
It has different pressures.
Yeah. That's right. So sorry. So it's kind of experiment. So, but to understand the real pressure effect. So, yes, it says origin is still question mark.
What was the effective alpha and gap for the uniform field case?
That is much larger than zero net field case. So this line is for zero net flux case, and other card point is for uniform vertical field case. So as you see, all uniform vertical field has a higher stress than the zero net flux case.
What
are the different flux case? Okay, so if I change the field strength of the uniform field, then it's almost proportional to that. So, but as you see, there's still kind of pressure effect for difference, yeah, it's about 1/6. I don't know if that have meaning or not, but yeah.
So you're saying that the stress remembers how much vertical flux there was.
That's right. Because the local box case, it's constant. It's constant. We cannot. It's periodic. So the vertical flux does not change with time. So that's constraint.
If you just plot a linear growth rate in the early phase as a function of vertical field strength, the maximum linear growth rate over the whole domain, Does that scale in the same way?
Maximum growth rate does not depend on the field strength.
Maximum growth rate is so many. In the simulation.
In the simulation.
With resistivity and everything else, I'm just wondering. This is not, I mean, if you measure the growth rate in the simulation, is that changing?
No.
Can you tell what precisely happens at the boundaries? What do you assume as boundary conditions?
Okay, so it's. Basically, it's periodic, but so there is shear flow for the initial state. So in radial direction, it's called sheared periodic. So if the fluid element goes outside, then that comes the corresponding place, the shear is considered. Shear box, yes. The shear periodic boundary condition.
Yeah, you're doing a displacement in the azimuthal direction. You go from the inner boundary to the outer boundary. Because the boundaries are sharing.
Yeah, but is there any
No. And all the free energy is coming from those sharing boundary conditions too.
Right.
That's, and there's no net.
Yeah.
Because it's Cartesian.
Yes.
They're not curvature.
Yeah.
Right. So there is no transport.
No, there is transfer. There's a flow of angular momentum outwards. There's no net mass flux.
Yeah. It's a local stress.
Yeah.
Angular momentum keeps being resupplied by the shift of gravity conditions.
It's just that we just get alpha of the shear box. That requires fluid. Does anyone understand why from the uniform field?
There is the idea because there's such a spiky shape excursion can be only seen for uniform vertical field case. So the advantage of that is because the channel flow is the solution of nonlinear MHD. So that can increase pretty large amplitude. So that can affect the average of the stress. So that is not exact answer, but the naively, so that could affect the difference.
You're still finding this
proportionality is,
And also practically,
Also
practically, I kind of wouldn't understand. Suppose you set up a scheme where you have the net zero flux, so you have easy going up and it comes down. But surely at some point, so you make those regions larger and larger, locally it would not know about the other region, it would think it's uniform. So
but
do you see such a transition? Have you tried to really think about changing the relative
that's structure? That's been done in the local simulations. When they start out with loops of toroidal field, the inner regions are basically channel flowing stable because there they feel that there's just a net toroidal flux. And you do see that, and in fact, the evolution there is like this, and that polar flux, while the outer regions are still getting their act together because the time scales are much longer. So you do, it does begin exactly as you're saying.
Does anyone understand?
I don't think we do.
No.
What about the simulations which have stratification without how do those differ between the case when you initiate a uniform curve, the case that you don't? One might expect there that it would not be so different, just because
I compare with the stratified disk calculation, and I just extract the average within the scale height, for example, and if I see compared with that, and then the ratios are quite similar, but it's hard to say about this amplitude, so.
I guess because in the stratified ones, you get a net flux growing, but no flux. You have no flux. Simulations end up showing that you get a net flux field.
But toroidal field, so this is net flux means vertical. Yeah, that's what.
But I understand that the fact that you can get any net flux to grow in the case of the stratified is changes,
doesn't
it? These are not,
you know,
any boundaries, you don't have that constraint on the system.
So you get the net flux to
grow? Yeah, in the simulations that have stratified, they get a net, not vertical.
By taking energy out of the stratification.
they get a net, they still have no flux, but they get a net toroidal flux.
No, I understand that. They don't change the net vertical.
No, right. But it's
like that's the boundaries are.
But they could change. They could change in those conditions. They're not periodic in the vertical direction. That's the point. So I was just wondering in general, because those simulations allow the system to evolve its flux and not conserve the flux, that it's just a simple question for the stratified cases. If you pin the vertical flux, would you expect the same fundamental difference if you have a stratified case, you're not constraining the flux to be the same, and you start the case with the initial flux, start it without, do you get the same differences for the stratified box that you get for the periodic box with respect to the saturation of the
When you have a vertical field in here, it makes kind of a loop that gets stretched out and makes this horizontal current sheet,
right, that you see in the picture.
So those pictures were with the vertical flux, right? The one where you showed us the field,
the channel,
the stripes earlier.
Not the stripes. No. Later he showed us one with a single current sheet down the middle of the book.
Yeah, that was a net flux.
It's just a net flux, and you take the thing and it makes a big loop.
Yeah.
And then it's and maybe like the Earth's tail, it just reconnects across that blob. And
that's
the end of your spike, and it's gone away, right?
Yes.
Now, that's less susceptible to resistivity than if you have field that's two different sides and you stretch it out, because then you're stretching out field the opposite side and you've got multiple
much smaller
multiple current shifts in there. So it may just be the sensitivity to resistivity that's you're seeing.
Would you expect that after because for very weak fields, the fact that that's maintained by the boundary conditions, you always have to force those current shifts. If you didn't have a net constrained flux, so if you didn't have a periodic box and you started with those two initial conditions, you could probably perhaps evolve such that you don't always have the same number of current sheet structures. It could evolve. You might expect such a system to asymptote the stratified case where the end state is more similar than the case for which it boards the dump.
I think that last way is very last. The saturation level of the Max first has a weak parallel relation with the gas pressure, but the origin is still unknown. Existence of net flux, vertical flux, enhances the saturation amplitude, so which means the evolution of the net vertical flux of the disk will be essential for the evolution. And that requires global simulation. And that's all.